like we talked about, the grief and the loss, that the loss that you lose over and over again as they change. You just lose it over and over and over again. It's devastating.
This is the When You Die podcast. If it has to do with death and dying, we're talking about it. Today's host is Kelly Edwards.
On the podcast today, we are talking about anticipatory grief. I'm joined by Carol Reed. Carol is a retired nurse who worked in palliative care for many, many years, and she joins us from her home in Prince Edward Island. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm really, really grateful for you to be here and to talk about this, because even though you're a nurse and you've seen it, this is a different side of the coin because you're actually experiencing it right now. I know that you had retired, Jim was retired, you were looking forward to this future together, and then Jim got a diagnosis of dementia.
Yes.
And that's a huge, huge thing that's life-changing for both of you.
So very much so, yeah.
Let's talk about Jim's diagnosis.
Well, thank you for having me here, Kelly. Well, he was diagnosed in 2019 with frontal lobe dementia. If there was just little odd behaviors and things he was doing that he was quite concerned about, he went to see his family physician, and they sent him off for some testing, and then the diagnosis came through. He lived a very productive life for the first year and a half. And then his behavior started to change. He became more forgetful. He would still drive, but he would get lost when he was driving. So then it became more of a caregiver role for me, because I wouldn't really want him to be out driving or going anywhere by himself without, you know, me there for security and stuff. So, and then it just was like that gradual downward decline into a whole different world where he needed 24/7 care at home. Our home care was very involved with him, and there was a program called the COACH program, which was caring for older adults at home and in the community. So they provided at home services, like the nurse practitioner came here, the home care coordinator came here, caregivers came here. Everything was done from home. So we didn't have to take him out into a different environment to have testing done and stuff. And it was an excellent program. And then as he progressed into this illness, he ended up in a nursing home. His behavior became very aggressive. And I was finding it very scary to have him at home, because his daytime, nighttime was all mixed up, and he'd be up in the middle of the night and he'd be either trying to get out, and you couldn't redirect him. If you tried to, he'd get very angry at you. And when he was sleeping, he would be having nightmares and he would be calling out in his sleep. And I was worried he was going to attack me. And maybe not knowing who I was in the middle of this horrific dream, which he couldn't tell me what it was or what was going through his head. So the team got together and they got him into a nursing home. He got on a dementia care unit, which was another journey in itself, because he had such behavioral issues. There was incidences with other residents with dementia, and he ended up doing the little trip through the hospital system and into our psychiatric geriatric unit at a psychiatric hospital, change medications, decline in his condition. And between the two of them, he's now a more content fella living in another facility. So we've had four moves in the last year from between facilities, hospitals, geriatric, psychiatric units, and another nursing home. So it's been quite a journey.
It's not easy for both of you.
No.
Yeah. There's your uber concern for your husband, which is bigger than it would normally be.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then he was diagnosed just probably 5 months ago with Alzheimer's as well. So he's got a mixed dementia. So he's got frontal lobe and Alzheimer's. So it's very difficult because now I go to see him and I don't see him as my partner anymore.
And that's the thing that I think people don't maybe realize is that when we talk about grief, everybody thinks grief is because somebody has died. But Jim is still with us, and you have to watch the person that you knew disappear.
Yes. So you go through it at every stage of change with him was another stage of grief for me, because I've lost yet another part. Like, he knew who I was, and we could have conversations. I could go visit him. We could watch movies. He was reasonably controlled. And then when he became aggressive, he was so mixed up and so confused. And he was in our hospital. He was in eMERGE for 5 days, and the system doesn't have the staffing to care for that person with dementia in a very busy observation unit. So there was 24-hour care, but I did most of it because they didn't have the staffing to cover the care. So then at that stage, he was so confused, he couldn't even voice anything. No words came out that made any sense. It was all gibberish, and it was the most devastating of it all until he got where he needed to be and the medication that he needed to help his brain settle. The brain is such a powerful organ. And to see how he was so mixed up and then changed again. So every time I'm going through grief, yet I'm trying to look after him, it's draining on me physically and
Of course.
mentally.
It's kind of a double-edged sword in the sense because you have the experience, you professionally, you've seen people at the end of their life for many years and could deal with it to help those families. How do you translate that to yourself?
Well, it's very hard because I know that in all of these facilities that he's been in, they all know that I am a nurse and I have worked in between long-term care and palliative care. So I've worked in it for my 37-year career. And so you do feel added pressure with that, but you're also, it's your loved one. So I know there's times I had that I was maybe unrealistic. And I'd even say to myself, I know the difference. But because I was viewing it from a different lens, right? And then you'd say, I know the difference, but this is how I feel. I want this for him. And it may have been unrealistic or whatever at the time, but I found that staff in the specialized areas were very supportive. And they understood that mixed feeling I had. It's a added pressure, but I'm also human, right?
How is Jim, as you knew Jim as and the person that he is now, what's the differences?
Oh, there's a multitude of differences. I view him differently. I still love him. But now I look at him more like a child because he's very childlike in his behaviors. And so you have to treat him, let's say, not treat him like a child, but you have to go with his flow. Like, if he wants to do like color or put a puzzle together, or, and it's not like a jigsaw puzzle, it would be the big block puzzle. Or if he wants to walk and walk and walk and walk, you just follow his lead. Now he doesn't even watch his sports or his TV. He's not interested in any of that. He's just very flat, very unengaging. Even when I visit like every second day. But even when I visit, it's like, what can we do? or what can I do to distract him, or what can I do to entertain him? Just depends on that moment, where he is that moment.
And when you see those stages of him, so when you talk about the aggression, that's not his personality normally.
Oh, no, he was the kindest, most gentlest soul. He would never strike out or push or be verbally aggressive or physically aggressive ever. He was the most calmest, most even-keeled gentleman ever.
And very dignified.
Very dignified, very private. Yes. He'd be mortified, but at the time of his diagnosis, not right away, but my mother had dementia too, so I'd been down this road with her. That in itself was a very different role, because there's the difference between the mother and the partner, right? Mm-hmm. It was his biggest fear that he was going to live with dementia. He said, if I ever get like that, you know, I don't want to live like that. So we did investigate the medical assistance in dying. And he said, like, he wanted that. And the doctor came to the house here. It was during that period of time when he was with the coach program through home care. They came to the house, and she and her nurse practitioner, and they did the assessment, but he was deemed incompetent. So that was very unfortunate, because if he had been deemed competent, he would have had the choice to end his life, because he knew, he watched his father, my mother, go through the stages of dementia. And that long journey, you know, when my mother was 10 years, his father was 5. You know, his biggest fear was that. Now here he is living through all of that. Mm-hmm. My saving grace is that he's unaware.
Yes.
He knows not the life he lives mm-hmm. now. It's not the one he'd want.
That's also an important fact, is that he's strong in body. He could last for years.
He could.
Your grief lasts for that long. Yeah.
And beyond. Yeah. I remember when my mother died, she was advanced stage at her death, where she was no longer able to feed herself, but she would drink the boost drink from a straw, and she lived on that for about a year and a half. And then when she died, almost immediately, I just remembered my mother as my mother. Mm-hmm. Like the last 10 years of her life were sort of deleted. And I was thankful for that, because there's nothing worse than just remembering the way they are at death. Mm-hmm. I remembered the way she was before she got sick. Yeah. And with Jim, extremely healthy, never had a health issue. He skied, he kayaked, he golfed, he played every sport. He was a baseball player and hockey player. Never took a pill. He was healthier than I am, yet his brain died. Mm-hmm. Or is dying quicker than the average brain. All our brains are dying. His is just dying much quicker.
Mm-hmm. Do you see glimpses of the Jim you knew when you visit him?
It's a rarity now. I used to, and now they are fewer and far between, but I do see the odd time. He will say something that you think, where did that even come from? Mm-hmm. And his sisters go and visit, and he can talk way back in the day. He grew up on a farm. His dad was a farmer. The odd time he'll go in and he'll talk about his brother, and he'll say, did you see Leonard? He was here just a while ago. And I'd say, no, I didn't see him. And then he'll say, well, last I saw him, he was out in the field planting. So, you know, he's way back, like 60 years ago, right? So, mm-hmm. God love him. But
how do you find the difference between what you would tell someone as a nurse versus what you experience now?
Well, you know, I think the hardest part is that I think I'm always in nurse mode. So I'm very realistic. I mean, I have my moments when I maybe am a little off the realistic trail, but I do tend to be very open. Like with his sisters, who two of them are kind of in denial of his illness, and they think that they can kind of rehabilitate him back to the old gym, that they see the more glimpses of yesteryear, and that brings them such great hope that in the reality of things, that's not where he is. But I find that I will say things like it is, and I think they look at me sometimes with this surprise that how could I be so callous or so hard about it? I do believe that you have to say this is what it is. This is where he is. Like, he may know you one day and not know you the next, or he may, the odd time I get a call from the nursing home, he's eaten something that's not meant to be eaten. Like, he would bite into a styrofoam or whatever those little pool noodles are made of. He thought it was a pink candy, albeit a huge pink candy, but he bit into it anyway. And they said, well, we got most of it out. And you think, oh my God, Jim would never do that. But that's what they do. They lose that connection. The sisters say, that couldn't have happened. Like, I'm making it up or something.
Yeah. No one wants to admit that reality, of course, about somebody they love. No,
exactly. But as you see it happen in front of you, then it becomes more real. Mm-hmm. Like, they just, you need to experience it to understand it.
And it is different for everyone. It sometimes, you know, we'll get people who will ask questions about particularly dementia, and they don't understand why this is happening because no one talks about XYZ. But the thing is that it's not consistent for everybody. So are there things that are similar, or is it just all random?
You know, different types of dementias have specific set of symptoms or characteristics, and you can kind of diagnose. They'll say, before we even do a brain scan, a lot of the specialists will say, oh, it's like classic frontal lobe, or it's classic Alzheimer's, or the Lewy body dementia. Well, there's many, many different types of dementia, but there's like a handful of very common dementias, Alzheimer's being the number one, the most common type of dementia. And you'll say, oh my God, he's just so classic. Like, he'll have these characteristics that are just so classic. In one aspect, a lot of patients who have dementia will have those classic characteristics, and yet they all kind of veer off the beaten path and have a few of their own little idiosyncrasies. So everybody is an individual. Yeah.
What's it like for you to watch this as not as a nurse, but as a person whose loved one is going through it?
Well, it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking to see your loved ones go through it. I think I feel like I'm old hat at it because of my mother. So you tend to get a little in the groove of it. Somebody who is going through it for the very first time, like we talked about, the grief and the loss that you lose over and over again as they change. You just lose it over and over and over again. It's devastating. Yeah. Because you have different plans. Before a diagnosis, you have plans. You have things you want to do. Now, Jim is 20 years older than me. So because he was so healthy, I think I never even imagined that he would have a brain that would die quicker than the average brain. And I thought, he's so healthy and he's got so much going for him, you know? I think I was shocked at the rapid change initially. Like, there was these changes where every month I could see something different happening to him. And he lost his filter, where he would say things that the old Jim would never say. He may think it, but he's not going to say it out loud. I think you may have experienced that a time or two.
Yes, because I should say that you and I know each other, and I do know Jim. And so yes, I have experienced a few times where I remember sitting around, it was Thanksgiving dinner actually, and you were mortified by something that Jim had said, and we all just sort of went, oh, well, there's nothing that can be done, and we know it's not really him, but
Yeah.
mixed company, that might be a little bit off-putting.
Right, exactly. And this, so there was more and more of that happening all the time. And he's an avid bridge player. And we were partners for 20 years. We could read each other like a book. And then I've lost that. So I've lost my partner in life and my bridge partner. And it was something that we did a lot of. We traveled to play bridge. It was our trips were to play bridge and then vacation on the side. But he lost that almost right away, which with a lot of people that I've nursed who have Alzheimer's can still remember how to play bridge. They may live in a nursing home in on a secure unit. Their friends would come in and they'd go play bridge, which blew my mind. Now, that was one of the very first things that Jim lost. So we knew there was, well, with the frontal lobe dementia, it's a whole different area of the brain. So between the two, your frontal lobe and your motherboard, it's gone. And then, the brain shriveling with the Alzheimer's. But he lost that right before he even needed constant care. He was at bridge one night and he didn't have a clue how to play. He didn't, like, all the usual stuff was just gone. In those times, you're just kind of shocked and you think, oh my God, here we go again. And it seems like every time there was a change, a major change, the littler changes you kind of don't notice till after the fact. And you look back and you think, oh my God, that makes sense now. But at the time, I didn't even realize. But then you see, Jim would lose those very repetitive, sort of well-built in activities. Like bridge is something that's was just a part of them. It was just there, like, and it's gone. So you're losing him, but you're also losing your social life. I found I was kind of holding him back from doing things with big crowds of people because you never really knew what was going to come out of his mouth. And like you said, you'd be mortified or and people didn't understand. They knew he had dementia, but they didn't understand. So he had an incident in the first nursing home he was at where there was another gentleman who would kind of get in his face. He became very obsessed with this gentleman who also had dementia. And I mean, neither one of them understood. And Jim, if he saw him in the hallway, he would just head straight for him. It was not a good situation. And they should have been separated a long time before they were. There was an incident where a visitor got in the way and got pushed and fell and broke a hip. And I remember feeling so devastated. First, that Jim did not know what he was doing, and the old Jim would not do that. He would never hurt another human being. But he knew not what he was doing. Just things like that that are just so unfortunate, yet are another mark.
And how do you not take it personally?
Well, that I took very personally. The visitor that was injured was somebody that we knew. He also played bridge, and we knew him. We would be at the same bridge games and stuff. I felt for his family because his road to recovery was quite long and quite challenging. I think if I met the family on the street, that I would still feel devastated for them. Yet devastated for Jim because he didn't know what he had done. And to him, he just, like 5 minutes later, nothing happened. He wasn't part of anything. Like it was totally gone from his head.
Within this grief, you're going through stages of grief. And like you said, you go through it every time something else changes because little by little pieces die, but he still remains. This also, when we talk about his lifespan could be quite long, that also ties you. You're not a widow.
No.
You're in this limbo.
Yeah, that just makes it hard. I have a wonderful family of friends and a wonderful family as well that helped me through the really down days. So I'm very lucky. And I do have to live my life. So I am going on a vacation in February. The first time I did that was actually when he was still at home. I needed a break and I went away for a week. I felt such guilt, the guilt you feel, but I'm gone on a trip and I've left my loved one at home with 24/7 caregivers. But I thought he's going to be so annoyed with me. And when I got back, he didn't even realize I was gone for more than if I had gone to get groceries. So that made the next time I went on my 2 week vacation, made it a little bit easier. He was, by this time, he's in a nursing home, well looked after, and I had family and friends here look visiting and for if any emergencies arose. So this year I'm going again. So you need to do self-care as well.
If someone was going through this for the first time, what's the advice that you would offer them?
It's so important to practice self-care. There's counseling, there's all kinds of resources out there that help you deal with your feelings inside. There's the Alzheimer's Society, and I believe every province has an Alzheimer's Society. They have so many resources. There's lots of reading material. I follow a group online on Facebook, an Alzheimer's group, and people will, they just kind of vent on there and they'll ask questions about other people going through the same things and what do you do in certain situations? Or this is my story. And some of the stories amaze me because people really invest a lot of their time and they're keeping their loved ones at home way longer than I could have. And I went through a lot of feelings around that too. And I felt like I was maybe inadequate. And then being the nurse in the field, I should be the one that can actually keep him the longest at home. But it just got beyond my ability. And so some of the stories, it's like, oh my goodness. But then you have to look out for yourself because stress will make you sick. Like stress really takes a toll on your physical and mental well-being. I'm the type of person where I do yoga and meditation. I have a lot of self-help books. So that works for me. I also have great friends that say, it's okay. It's okay to feel this or to do that. So you kind of have that validation that it is okay. It is okay that he's in a good place. He's well looked after. They'll call me if there's anything. If I don't feel like going in today, don't go in. For example, there's a ton of examples, but that's one of them. And it is okay. It's a journey to get there in itself, but it is okay. It is a journey. You go through all the stages. You go through the denial, the anger, the grief, every stage you go through, guilt, ton of different emotions can flow through me at any given time. Less and less so now because he's so content and happy. It helps me to be more content and happy. But the last 18 months has not been pretty, but we get through it with the help of professionals, friends, family. And in talking about it, you're going to cry. I find it hard to talk about it sometimes without crying. And it's not that I'm sad. I am sad, but not as much. I've dealt with that sadness, but it breaks my heart. But I don't let it bring me down. And I work very hard to be happy. But you do have to find when there is humor, you have to go with that humor. And that sometimes is people don't understand that because they think it's disrespectful. It's not disrespectful. If they do something that's just, you think, oh my God. And I find myself sometimes I will chuckle just because it was a funny thing. Not, you know, serious events, but little events. I'll say to Jim, I'll say, did you just really do that? And then he'll just look at me and smile. So I don't know if he's being a mischievous kid or if he even realized what he did, but it's stuff that makes me laugh. And you do have to laugh at some things.
It's okay. It's okay if you laugh, and it's okay if you cry.
It's okay. Those emotions are what make us human. So it is okay. Yeah. And it always feels a little bit better when he laughs too, even though he doesn't know what he did. But, you know, there's just things. And I find where he lives, the other residents that he's with, they'll do things. It's just kind of cute things they do together, you know. He likes to be involved as well. So that's nice too.
Like you said, if we take joy where we can get it.
Exactly. Because I know Jim would chuckle too.
Anyway. Oh, Carol, I so appreciate you talking about this. I think it's a really important conversation that we have to have because this is going to face so many people, and it faces so many people at end of life. And then the people that are left to witness, it's not an easy road. Thank you for being so open about it. And I know it's an emotional and hard topic to talk about, but I feel that it's one that we need to have.
Well, it is. I am a big advocate of knowledge. We'll never understand the whole of it all, but just to understand the differences that they go through and the moments that they'll have and the emotions and feelings and stages that you go through, that a person goes through, and that everything you feel and do, it's all okay. It is okay, but it's so important to talk about it and try to understand, but to talk about it and with people who have gone through it. If I thought I could help one person from this, I feel like I've done a good thing. I think it's very important to go with their flow, to be where they are and just say, you can't change that behavior. You just go with that. And if they're happy and content, I'll grab every great moment I can have.
Well, that's a really lovely note to end on, I think, because there's comfort and there's hope in that as well.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.
I kind of rambled on, but it was fun. It was good.
That's good. And that's kind of the point. So I thank you again, Carol Reed, from Prince Edward Island. And we send lots of love to you and Jim.
Thank you.
This conversation is brought to you by the When You Die Project. From existential afterlife questions to palliative care and the nuts and bolts of green burial, if it has to do with death, we're talking about it. WhenYouDie.org.